Yeah, so, okay, thanks. So today we speak about a topic which we've been working on and off for quite a while. I like this quite a lot, and it's confined biopolymers. So trying to understand some issues about the physics of confined biopolymers. Might need a laser pointer. Is this one? Yeah, that's great. Okay, so I will mainly speak about DNA packaging in bacteriophages. You've heard something about that already quite a lot. So you heard Javier and you heard Francesca yesterday. And if there is some time, I will discuss also chromosome territories, which we've been working recently. You've listened to Enzo, also started to think about it in a topological way. So collaborators for the DNA packaging analysis, Christian Micheletti, Enzo Landini, and David. And for the chromosome part, if I get there, I'm speaking with Peter Cook as well in Oxford. Okay. And I should mention that for DNA packaging, we also collaborated with Julia Yeomans and Issam Alib. I've not discussed, so for DNA ejection simulation, I will not discuss them today. So first, let me have just a glance at observations in DNA packaging. So this you saw already in Javier's talk. Actually, it was a little bit better picture, yeah? So this is a little fuzzy. So anyway, apart from the interesting thing for me about bacteriophages, so bacteriophages are very simple biophysical systems. It's as simple as you can get in terms of biological organisms. You can think of them as a container, a protein-made capsid, in which you've got some genome. And the thing that I will consider today is these bacteriophages, when they have DNA, double-stranded DNA inside, which is an example before that you heard from Javier. And one thing that raises my interest is that, okay, phages are the simplest example in order to study genome organization. So double-stranded DNA is packed inside bacteriophages. And when you do, when you have a look at the length scales, there is microns of DNA, so tens of thousands of kilobase pairs, which are packed in a capsid which is tens of nanometers. And this is replicated, so I mean this idea of putting long chains in confined volume is replicated in other systems, much more complicated, of genome organization. For example, in bacteria, in E. coli, has millimeters of DNA, as we heard from Javier as well, inside a micron-sized cell, and men have meters of DNA inside a 10 micrometer-sized cell. This is linear compaction. If you want to have a look at how much volume these chains make up, this is actually what is the most compact system. So DNA inside bacteriophages, if you think of it as a chain of spheres, it would make up for 50% or so of the volume of the capsid. Okay, so there's not much space left. I mean, if you were to do the closest possible packing, is about 75%. Bacteria is much less packed, so it's below 1%, and men is 5 to 10%. So the chromatin in men is 5 to 10%, just if you want to know about the volume organization. Okay? So the interesting, in my view, is because this is the simplest example in which you can study genome organization. Of course, you know that phages are actually quite important for many purposes. You might not know that they're used as food additives, or might know that. So phages eat bacteria. So a very good way to, so bacteria like Listeria could cook for poisoning. So a way to fight this is just to spray your food with millions of phages, and then it works. So if you eat viruses, that's bad. It doesn't affect you, it just kills the Listeria.
I don't know about that. Don't think so. It's 50 nanometer, come on, yeah. Anyway, that's the yucky, but for physicists like me, the interest is in genome organization.
So I'm going to perhaps try to shed, so if what I would like to take you to take home from this talk is that we still, in my view, have some questions about the genome organization in bacteriophages. So when I entered this field, we're working with Christian, we thought that this was long, this was settled, but actually this is, I hope that you will agree with me that this is not the case. So if you want to understand the packing of genomes in bacteria, or not completely, in bacteriophage you can have several experimental assays, so you could try to view them with cryo-EM. That's perhaps the first thing that you would try. You would try to see how it looks like.
So this is a very new, well, rather new, it's 2 years ago now. It was published in Nature, and it's a powerful experimental studies of the genome organization in bacteriophages, that's epsilon 15. And as you see here, I do not have the confidence to get into the details of this, but this is more sophisticated than what they used to do before. Before they used to have pictures like this. Here they can have a three-dimensional reconstruction somehow, and they can see that the first few layers, at least, are organized in a very ordered way. And you might, well, Javier had this among one of his spooling DNA models. We'll come to this later on. So another thing is, cannot tell us more about the organism. That's the second essay that you could try to use to study something about genome organization. And we had a very interesting experiment in P4 bacteriophage. So again, this is, like I said before, the amount of stuff that is packed in these tens of nanometer size containers. And the important thing is that if you look at the NOT spectrum, you have some interesting things happening because you lack the 4-1 knots, so the phage knot you see here, you don't have a spot, and the 5-1 knot is larger than the 5-2 knots. That means that the torus knot is much more populated than the twist knot. So, again, there have been simulations by Javier and by Christian Enzo, myself, and the Witt, and we try, so the, all the simulations have tried to understand this from a statistical mechanics point of view. And actually, the reason why I first got into this was because of DNA packaging because of single molecule experiments. So what in this experiment have been done, the biophysicists play tug of war with a molecular motor which packs. So in order to pack the DNA inside a phage, you need a molecular motor which just reels it in. So you have to try to pull it out with an optical trap, and in that way you can estimate the force which is needed to package DNA, or equivalently, the force with the packed chain exerts on the opening. Okay? And again, this might be a way to understand something about arrangement. Let's speak there. I will just keep the discussion about the dynamics. But what they end up with is a force versus loading curve. This is piconewton, this is percent package. The force is large, and people have also looked at different ionic strength, and you see that if you have more electrostatic interaction, force goes up a lot. And that, again, this might be an indirect way of measuring the ordering inside. It has to be related, anyway. There have been some simulations. First simulations were by Gerber's group, and there have been simulation by Javier and Harvey, and we also did some simulation on this problem. And what our contribution was to single out an entropic part in the force which was felt. Okay? So as you heard from Javier and also from Gelbert's paper, it was clear that bending makes a lot of is important. So we tried to measure the different contributions to the force. It turns out that there's a big entropic contribution. So I will just briefly discuss the methodology. So I will try to answer, as far as DNA package is concerned, two questions. The first is, what is the shape of the packaged DNA, or at least try to get some ideas on that. And the second, can we understand the knot spectra which are observed? And in order to do that, I will use very different methods. So we So, Christian and Enzo have devised, so we are using a quite powerful way to sample knot spectrum in equilibrium. Okay, so I will first discuss how to try and sample confined biopolymers. So, when you have a confined biopolymer, suppose that you want to sample configuration in thermodynamic equilibrium. So for physicists, means that there is no kinetic bias. We're just looking at the thermodynamics of the system. So we think that there is a free energy given by Hamiltonian, and we just look at the statistics of the different polymer conformation. So that's statistical mechanics. Well, the first thing you can say, okay, we've got an Hamiltonian, so we've got a weight, and then we try to distort our chains and accept or reject the move with the Metropolis algorithm. So that's the first thing that we will do. However, in this way, since we want to sample polymers which are confined, the chance to do this is practically zero, just by pure
thermodynamic sampling. So if you look at that, this is the genetic histograms of knotted and unknotted rings as a function of the radius, and you soon, okay, can you see it? Otherwise from there, and you soon are unable to sample at all. Okay, so if the sphere becomes small, you just don't see these conformations. So the way out of that is to use bias sampling. So not to just give the same, not just that, give a Hamiltonian Boltzmann contribution to everyone, because in that case, the squeeze configuration would have a negligibly small weight, okay? But just to weight the Hamiltonian with the bias. In this case, the bias proportional to the pressure times the volume. So if you put the pressure, you're pressurizing the thing, and then you're biasing your sampling towards confined polymers. And that's how it works, basically. So this is without any bias. You would never reach a low value of R. If you bias it, you will, okay? And that's what, if you remember before, we couldn't, we had just this size. We could only sample the size at very large R. And in this case, with the pressure, we can tune the confinement level, which we can reach, okay? You should probably point there, right? Because it's difficult otherwise. Which works better, I think? Okay, yeah. Okay, so we have Monte Carlo simulations. If we just sample with Boltzmann weight, we would never get the squeeze conformation, so we use bias. That is still not enough, because the equilibration will be very slow at low R. So if you are very squeezed, even if you have a bias, it will take a long time for the polymer to sample successively independent, statistically independent configuration. You make an order of estimate calculation, an order of magnitude estimate, and basically the equilibration time is given by a reptation time, which is proportional to the time to the length of the polymer to the power 3, at least. So that's very slow. So the way out of this, or a way to get this into control, is to use a different value of pressures and to use what is called a multiple Monte Carlo chain, which was introduced by Carlas to Insel and Van Rensburg a few years ago by now. The idea is that we have different replicas of the same system, we simulate them, and we have different biases, each for every simulation, for every replica we have a different bias, and then we try to swap the replicas. Okay, so occasionally a replica which has a history of low pressure can get to large pressure, and that helps a lot to equilibrate. That's it for. So this is what we are going to use to generate the independent configuration and to study knots there. I'll briefly look at another way of generating conformation, which we use with ENSO first with vesicles, but it can be generated, generalized to packaging very easily. And then that would be it for the method. So this is a three-dimensional Monte Carlo. So we have a kinetic Monte Carlo update rule. So we have our chain in the capsid. We select a bit at random, that's the red thing there. We move it and try to accept it or reject according to the Metropolis test. There will be a Hamiltonian for the polymer, and also it can interact with the capsid if you think it is reasonable. And then the way to get over the sampling conformation, the sampling difficulties, is to grow the chain with certain probability k on. So in this way, you will be able to generate very fast conformation because you are using a way of ratchet mechanism. So as soon as there is some space, zack, you grow a monomer. In this way, we cannot be sure that all conform. So this is basically the only way that I know to generate so packed conformations, so like bacteriophages. We cannot be sure that there are not dynamical effects. There might well be, but you can argue that later on in packaging, this is mimicking the reptation process which should happen in reality. Okay? So these are the two methods. So this method I will, the method before, so the multiple Monte Carlo, I will use to study knots, and this one will be used to study shape of the DNA inside. And I think I, well, how much have I spoken for? Is it 15 minutes, 20?
15, yeah. So, okay, I just discussed it. Is, so you have multiple Monte Carlo, multiple Markov chain method. That's good because you are sure that it will be in thermodynamic equilibrium. That's very important in physics. So we are sure that there will be only thermodynamic effect in the result. Okay? You can get very good statistics, but you will be very limited in size. It's very difficult to equilibrate large polymers, or at least limited in size, and we will not be able to reach the phage density. So we'll be limited in density. Still, we can see something about compaction. The Monte Carlo tells you that you can use real genome chains and real genome length and realistic packing. It's very hard to get statistics. We have to grow one from scratch every time, so it's tough. And dynamical effect makes the Fresnel state I told about before. We kind of hope that this is affecting, affecting the steady state in a physical way. a few words. Okay, now I'm going to discuss an application to DNA packaging. So we are going to coarse grain first in the Monte Carlo, at least, in the kinetic Monte Carlo, the chain as a the DNA as a chain of spheres. Each sphere is 2.5 nanometer in size. That's the hydrated DNA thickness. And there will be a filling fraction, which is 0.2.5. It's like in bacteriophages, or, but very similar. And the persistence length is, it's a, well, we have seen it several times in this conference, so it's the length over which thermal fluctuation can buckle the fiber. That's a very important concept here. I'm sure you're all familiar. And I will consider variations of this. But DNA has 50 nanometer in principle. That's what we know in studies which are not confined. Okay, so let's see. Okay, I go back to this. So this is the experiment. This is the, by far the most successful model for genome organization in bacteriophages, at least among biologists. So what I would hope, as I said, as a take-home message, is that there is some, there is a lot more than this model in real physics of bacteriophages, at least according to computer simulations. So I will show you quite a few simulations now. So this is a Monte Carlo simulation of a sphere of radius 21.5 nanometers. So we are thinking of 529 here. That's the pooling experiment we set from there. So the polymer has 50 nanometer persistence length. So it's very simple, but there is nothing which is adjusted. Okay, so this is just what we take from the book. So the persistence length of DNA is 50, and the radius is more or less what you expect from pi 29. It will not be complete spherical, but we're making this assumption, okay? So this is the number of grown monomers as a function of time. That is not important here. You see that quite quickly you reach a state which is pretty disordered. There is local ordering if you want, but it is pretty disordered. It's not at all like the inverse pool. And you go on and on, and you make a mess. Probably this is. Let me see. Yeah, here you have another rendering. Takes a little bit to get started. Yeah, okay. So you see that there is local ordering, but there are domains, so different layers of the DNA onion is arranged in different ways. Okay? So that's with the persistence length that you would expect for DNA. So again, these are studies with slightly different capsid shape, and these are three different times in the packing. These are spherical viruses, which okay, the real sphere do not exist, and this is more like 529, so it's slightly elongated. Okay, but that's not too much difference. Okay, so still there is some sort of liquid crystalline alignment close together, but there's lots. This is a mess. So if you increase, so we were interested in asking what happens if we increase the persistence length. Even though we know that in principle DNA has 50 nanometers, there have been studies that insert it might change. And anyway, for a physicist, you want to understand why this is not giving what the inverse pool model tells you it should do. Okay, suppose that we increase the persistence length a bit. Let's see. Yeah, so you see that at the beginning, you have something which is looking more like textbook studies. Now it will get a little bit frenzied in the end. Sorry. You see that the last few layers have gone at my half jump. Yeah, so there is, anyway, it's much more order now. So increase it still more, increase the persistence length still more. We do get, eventually, the inverse full model. Okay, so that's for a persistence length which is larger, 5 times the one of DNA. That's, okay, I just rotated it with Rasmus, this is the end state, yeah. So you see that there is a hole in the middle, so if you look at the density, there's a hole, it's again in agreement with what you would expect from the spool model, and there is slightly tilt, or twist rather, it would be a twist actually, between different layers, but that's, so they are like that, but it's not a big effect. So, if you increase the persistence length a lot, you go back to the inverse spool model. So in physics, this is quite, this rings a bell, because it looks like we tried with DNA with the right persistence length, and it was rather disordered. If you increase it, it sort of looks like it abruptly changes into another shape. So what this reminds is of a phase transition. So in my view, it is interesting to think about a different dimension, if you want, in this physics of bacteriophages. So if you think that DNA is just a point in a curve, so if you scan the persistence length, you will have a sort of phase transition or crossover between a very disordered and a very ordered phase, and DNA is just a point, which can actually be either way. So try to quantify this a bit, so look at the... Okay, so I need just... So it's very difficult to quantify this, so you would see, say that this is a mess and this is very nice, but we want to... So to find a measure of spooliness. So look at the red curve here, I will discuss that only, that's the average binormal. Okay, so if you had a perfect spool, we heard something about that, well, in the posters. If it was a perfect spool, it would be lots of concentric spheres stacked on top of each other, and the tangent would just lie along the circle, the normal would just go into the center, and the binormal would be up or down. So if you had a perfect spool, the binormal would be completely aligned. So the average model would be 1. Yeah? So you see that for... So this is the persistence length, and this is the size of the capsid. Look at this. This gives you another measure of spooliness, but okay, qualitatively it's the same. So you see that there is this crossover. Got quite interested in that, and try to understand whether this is a real phase transition or not is actually quite difficult, but okay, I will just show you a couple of data. So this is, so you can look at the tangent-tangent correlation as a function, again, of this stiffness parameter, and this tangent-tangent correlation does overdamped oscillation. Okay, it's spooly, so, but it loses its memory after a while. So the envelope decays with a constant chi. So this guy jumps a little bit, yeah? So this suggests that there is something going on. That's not very clear. The only thing which I thought was clear was to look at the integral of the binormal-binormal correlation. So this is telling your spool is around this side, so it's got a binormal which is pointing out here at this point, and then maybe a little later it's tilted a bit, and then it's tilted a bit again. Integrate this. And if it is completely uncorrelated or exponentially uncorrelated, you get something, so you get a number, okay? Whatever the length, this will be the same. Okay, is that clear? So if the binormal-binormal correlation decays exponentially, if I integrate it, I will get a number. Yeah? I think this is simpler than... So if I have a binormal-binormal correlation, which is decaying like... the average distance along the chain divided some psi b, and you integrate this, so you call this x, you get something which is really order psi b. It doesn't depend on n. So you see that for small values of the persistence length, that's the case. So this is increasing length from black to red to blue, whereas in this phase, this is not the case. The binormal correlation lose memory of themselves very, very late. The spool persists quite a lot. This is as far as I can get for the quantification. DNA would be here. That's the biological problem. So And we're not discussing into this, but it turns out, so we can put electrostatics. Electrostatics wouldn't help. So if you decrease the ionic, so if you increase the ionic strength, you would still find the same thing. What turns out to help is that, so this is a measure of the spooliness, it's a function of the same parameter. So you see that this case in which you have attractive interaction, like with multivalent counter ions, and we also put a capsid core, like in epsilon 15, gives much better ordering for the same value of persistence time. And this is another case in which I have an interaction between the protein capsid and the DNA. Okay? So the moral of this story is that if you just do an honest simulation of DNA inside a capsid with the physical parameters for DNA persistence length and the capsid sphere, you get something which is much more messy than what we would expect from biological models which are commonly used. So it's something more like what Javier was saying, as a liquid crystal model in which this binormal changes a lot, this pool axis. However, the DNA is on the disordered phase, but it doesn't take much to get it ordered. So if you tweak a bit the interaction potential, you can actually make it much more ordered, and this is quantified here. Okay? So the very fact that DNA might be on the edge of this crossover should not be surprising after all, because its persistence length is 50 nanometer. This is of the order of the capsid size. Okay, so that's an interesting coincidence. So we have done a simulation with different capsid sizes as well, capsid shapes as well. And so they pack in different ways. But I will not discuss this too much. So let me now turn to some equilibrium. So, okay, we try to do some simulation to understand something about the shape. As I said in the beginning, there are these nice experiments on P4 which try to measure the knot spectrum. And so we have tried to, again, as a way to infer something about the shape. So the question we asked is how knotted is a phage DNA? And for that, we used a model which has been already discussed. So the way to go into, so it's very difficult, as I said before. We want to say something which is in thermodynamic equilibrium. So we want to be sure that there are no dynamical effects. So the model is semi-flexible. Sorry, I got it wrong. It's semi-flexible ring of cylinders. So the diameter of cylinders are 2.5 nanometer. Contour length is that of P4, and the persistence length is 50 nanometer. So the Hamiltonian, so yeah, Cozzarelli and, well, Vologodsky actually, I think, introduced this model. These are cylinders, and Deguchi used this, and he was discussing some results with that actually before. So these are cylinders which are long and thin, okay? But still have a bending rigidity, so it costs some energy to bend them, and there is a hardcore interaction. Is a little bit more complicated. So this is the bending, so this is normal difficulty kink it. And then there is a self-avoidant interaction, which is harder than for hard spheres, but which is more difficult, but it's straightforward. If the cylinders interpenetrate, we give them an infinite potential. So the first thing that we did in order to calibrate our simulation, so we're using multiple Monte Carlo here, multiple Markov chain Monte Carlo, is to study how the probability of forming simple knots as a function of inverse radius. Okay, so in this, so the inverse radius gives you a measure of confinement. See, if the radius is small, you are here. And if the radius is small and you have large confinement, you're there. Okay? So this is the probability of formation of simple knots, and you see that we are in good agreement with the agreed results by Ribbenkamp and Vologodsky and Cozzarelli. Okay. And we have an S spectrum here. So there are two observations which were made in the P4 experiment. The first one, well, there are three, okay. So the first one is that on average you have more chiral knots than achiral. And that was explained with phantom rings, also with a right bias. But we want to study thermodynamics, so without any bias and self-avoiding. So the first thing that was observed in the experiment is that you have a disproportionate favoring chiral over achiral knots. The second thing which was observed is that you have barely any phoon, okay? And the other thing is that the twist knot is much, much lower than the torus knot, which again would suggest that you have some kind of spooliness in the experiment, something like that. So we wanted to understand, well, sort of guess that our simulation will not reproduce these spoolings. I mean, they are quite disordered as they were before, but we still want to know whether the knot spectrum is coming out right. So a way to characterize a chiral versus a chiral knot, the easiest one that we find is to consider the six crossing knots. So we have two chirals, 6-1, 6-2, and the chiral 6-3, okay? So, and again, as in all cases, they increase with the increase in the confinement, and then they decrease later on, leaving way to more complicated knots. Okay, so this is more or less what you observe for increasing size, you also observe for increasing confinement. That's not surprising. What we want to know is, are there more chiral or more achiral knots? So, a way to view this is to look at the composite knots. So you can see whether there's a... So, composite knot can be a square knot or grainy knot. This is a chiral and this is globally chiral. So in the square knot, there's plus minus trefoil, eliminate itself, and they eliminate each other. So another simple way to measure whether there are more chiral versus a chiral knots is to look just at the composite ones, okay, at the grainy versus square knots. So we see that the first thing we wanted to see is, can we identify them nicely? So this is, sorry, the ride before the smoothing, and this is the ride after the smoothing. So as Andrei was discussing yesterday, you see that they can cluster nicely. We have an ideal number for ride for trefoils. So they cluster nicely, so we can separate them. And we can ask, are there more square or grainy knots? So we can do that, and this is the important thing. So if we sum up all the chiral knots, and sum up over all the achiral knots, from the ratio, we can have an indication whether confinement increases or not the chirality. And the clear the indication from the data is that there is a clear, albeit perhaps not very big effect. So just by confinement alone, you seem to be able to disfavor a chiral and favor chiral knots. Okay, so that's the result. So for that, you seem to have no need to use kinetic simulation. What about the other non-trivial observation that you have more torus than twist knots, okay? In this case, so you would expect to have more 5-1 than 5-2. Actually, very little 5-2 are observed in the experiment. And so you see that in our thermodynamic calculation, this is not observed. Okay, so again, if you look at the probability of 5-1 over 5-2, this black curve, so this is again a function of confinement, so this is more or less level, so there is not a big effect of confinement along this, by changing this coordinate. These data here are the ones for which we have a huge number of unknown permittance on unknown knots. Yeah. So, the bottom line of this is that, so okay, if you look at the experimental, 5-1 and 5-2 are very, very small. So one argument, so it is not totally, so these simulations are not clearly disproving the model, because we are reaching values of the confinement which are much weaker than in reality, or a bit weaker, okay? So you could argue that here something else could happen. And indeed, if you look at the simulation, the experiments, the 5-1 and 5-2 are very, very small probability. So we would need to squeeze it a little further, but we can't within this algorithm, because we cannot equilibrate more than that. So the bottom line of the knot calculation, so we have simulated self-avoiding semi-flexible knots. in a confined geometry, we have seen that we can reproduce just by confinement the first observation that chiral knots are more than achiral knots. So that might be a consequence, or at least among other things, that might be explained by confinement alone. So you just squeeze them and more chiral than achiral appears. That's not very trivial. But we cannot reproduce with thermodynamics alone the other observation that torus knots are more than twist knots. Okay. So I think I will try to spend my last few minutes to discuss a part of what I had in the slides. So as I said, this is the easiest example of genome organization. This is as easy as you can get. And you see that if, as I hope I have convinced you, we still have questions to ask. So we were interested in understanding, so with Enzo and Peter Cook, we studied, Enzo told you about simulations of approaching links. So one question which could be of interest is, what is the behavior of a loss of polymer? And again, I will show you that we have some problems back to the basic. So if you look at statistical mechanics models, so there is some interesting things that we do not understand so far. So these are chromosome painting pictures taken during interphase. So Enzo has shown that to you. So usually you might be accustomed to chromosomes during mitosis. They are long and thin. During interphase, they decondense and they become more polymer-like. And each of them occupies a different territory, so they are segregated. Okay? And I will not discuss this. We don't have enough time, otherwise it's all rushed. So it is possible to generalize the 3D kinetic Monte Carlo method to study a melt of polymers. Again, it is important that they are confined, because I told you that both in phages, in bacteria, and in eukaryotes, the genome is confined. So the genome in this case is chromatin, which is 30 nanometer fiber. We had some ideas about the modeling by Enzo, so this is basically the same thing. There are many, however. And this is just a qualitative simulation, so it is impossible actually to mimic the whole length of chromatin. Yeah, so every bit is 30 nanometers, so you can have 3,000 to 4,000 kilobases. You would need 100 megabases per chromosome, so way too many bits. It would be a million bits to do them all. Okay? Anyway, the dynamics is the same as before. And again, we have growth in order to simulate melts at high packet fraction. So this is a melt of flexible polymer, which are self-mutually avoidant. And you see that I have tried to paint them as you would do in a painting experiment. And that's pretty bad. So if you this is quite honest calculation. Okay, we don't know many things, but this is, many people would agree that chromatin behaves like a 30 nanometer fiber. We don't know much about its organization after that stage. And there is a persistence length, which is, again, quite honest. There are some experiments of trying to measure the persistence length of chromatin. They vary between 40 and 200. So any value you take, you would get this. So if you have linear polymers and you confine them, you squeeze them, they do not segregate at all. So they just mix them.
Yeah.
So this can be quantified a bit more by this content map here. So here I have 10 polymers, for example, length 100 each. So this is the first polymer. And when you see, and this is the second, and so on and so forth. So if you saw segregation, you would have to see a block matrix in the thing there. And it obviously isn't. So if you have spots, so people in protein folding know this as well, if you have spots which are off diagonal, they are very non-local contacts. So this chain makes contact with this chain, with this chain, not but with itself alone. Okay? And we have to use a threshold to define contact. So this is what you could, in principle, measure with fish experiments. So with 3C experiment, chromosome conformation capture, you could see which bit is in proximity with another one. Anyway, this is complete crap, because it will tell you that,
Have I got 2 minutes? Well, yeah.
So this will tell you that the polymers will completely interpenetrate. So there is an interesting question, again, why do territories appear? Why do
chromosome segregate. And Enzo showed you, because we have some ideas that the rosettes that Enzo was telling you about put out quite a lot. Well, just as a proof of principle, I just show you this last slide. So this is what, I mean, if you remember, Enzo's model was a chromatin with sticky bits. If you have this, so if you have many polymers with sticky bits in a sphere, they are able to form, to collapse, and you see that each of them, I mean, it is not perfect, but you form rosettes and they segregate much better. So this could be one way to have territories, or at least that's a statement. And again, this can be quantified more with a contact map. Again, this time looks much more reasonable. So I have finished. I stop here. I will just recap briefly. So I hope I have at least raised two quite important review questions in genome organization. One, or sets of questions. One is in bacteriophages. So I hope that you agree that it is not clear why with this coarse-grain, at least if you do a coarse-grain simulation of DNA inside bacteriophages, it looks quite disordered. Whereas, and it also looks like there is a sort of transition or crossover between a disordered phase and a spooling phase, cranking up the bending rigidity. The DNA would be in the disordered phase, but it could be that it's not too far from this sort of phase transition. So this is a point of view which is very different from the inverse pool, at least in my view, or at least from the physical. So the inverse pool is just one phase, if you want, but there's much more to it. So it could be that by varying salt strength, you could experience different phases. So we have seen that there are open questions in understanding the dynamic, the thermodynamics of knots. So in particular, we don't understand why there are more torus than twist knots, at least with thermodynamic simulation. And the second question, the third question that I have, so, is that why do chromosomes segregate in interphase? So we have seen again with quite naive, perhaps, but still taking numbers from reality models, it is not trivial to understand why chromosomes segregate. And this is maybe an interesting biophysical question. That's it. Thanks.
So, with a couple of questions. So,
I have a biologist conjecture for you.
Yeah, okay.
So, Isabel mentioned Jennifer Mann's results that she had in my lab, and I think some people in this room know these results. We're this close to trying to publish them. But what we found is if given the chance, a type 2 topoisomerase will untie the 5-2 in one step.
Mm-hmm.
So what that says is it has a great, perhaps kinetic, I mean,
yeah.
We're going to mix mm-hmm. this preference for that particular knot. Many of these bacteriophages encode their own type 2 topoisomerases. And those that don't hijack the type 2 topoisomerases mm-hmm. from their hosts. I've always wondered, how can you strip clean these DNAs from, you know, the topoisomerases from the DNA as you're packing it in? And you tell me it's only 50% full. So there's room, perhaps, for some topoisomerases. And all they have to do is hit their very best thing, and perhaps they dampen your twist knot population
mm-hmm.
so that you'll never see, ever, because it's because you have another part of the equation.
When they are in the bacteria and you reform capsids,
they're going to take out those twist knots, perhaps. I mean, it's just a conjecture. It's mm-hmm. not even a hypothesis. It's a trick, not even a technique.
Another question?
So, if I can answer to what you just said, in the bacteriophage, it's 50% when the DNA is dehydrated. So, if you add water, you kill 100% of the volume of the bacteriophage. So, you add water molecules to. There is nothing inside. No.
Well,
there's some.
Okay, well, that's. Okay.
There's just the corpus.
So, 50% is with the sphere. It would be a little more even if you. Think of, so there's not too much.
Yeah, there is no room. Once you have the water, there's no room. Yeah, I don't think. I don't know. I don't think that's. Well, because they are linear inside. So the, inside the bacteriophage is linear. The DNA is a linear molecule. So you take it out. Oh, we can talk later. Let me ask. So in the when you crank up the persistent length, you see this toroidal spooling.
That's right.
This is spooling nothing. Have you checked the node distribution for that?
We don't have too many.
We don't see nodes there.
Not enough, and it is not close for the moment. Yeah, I imagine that that could be something that we.
That's the type of simulation that. And we started with Steve Harvey, but then he went on and did his own simulations. And what he found is that he couldn't find any knots.
That's right. So you would argue that for very large persistence length, you might end up with that. There were few simulated. But okay, that would be so.
I mean, you can check his data. It's Lamarck and Harvey.
Yeah. So they have a few tens of simulation, but okay, if you see them all unknotted, then it's a signature, obviously.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So it could be that if you crank up very much persistence length, you get that. Yeah. Okay.
The persistence length is about the size of the capsid, and but in all this kind of simulation, people always forget about the inner surface of the capsid, which is crystal-like.
Yeah.
And so I just wonder if this crystal-like structure would act as a template to order DNA inside, just a first layer, you know, and then
So there is something there, because so we did simulation with different sizes and shapes, many of them. So maybe you mean it is icosahedral, right? Yeah,
not the overall shape, but it is made by protein
charges.
Monomers, which are perfectly ordered.
Yeah.
And so they act like rails, where along those rails DNA could be ordered, and then
No, that's an interesting. Yeah, so you would say that there is some sort of interaction or templating. Yeah, so again, so it wouldn't change the physical picture, but maybe it will change the biology. So you will have some sort of ordering. It will decay if these things are correct. Okay, this is like a liquid crystal. Exactly. So then it depends. Then when we had some sort of attractions between capsid and DNA. We didn't really template it. That might be a good idea. So there will be, in principle, there will be boundary layer that will be ordered and then not. But it might be important because in biology you might not have much more than the boundary layer. That I don't know yet.